Welcome to Holistic Wellness, a podcast exploring the science and metaphysics of health and wellness. I'm your host, Brandi Searcy, founder and formulator at Rain Organica, where you'll find holistic skincare in one simple routine.
We'll go ahead and get into this. All right. Welcome, officially welcome to From Gaslit to Resilient. Let's just go ahead and get right into it, because I think as I'm talking a little bit through my health journey, you'll understand why I named the program the way I did, and then kind of what led me here, what led me to see the body through this particular lens. So my name is Brandi Searcy. I am a pharmaceutical research scientist, and quite frankly, I was raised in Western medicine. My mom is a registered nurse. My sister is a nurse practitioner. My grandmother was a licensed practical nurse. So I've been around med speak for as long as I've been around English. It basically is my second language, or quite frankly, just one of my native languages. Now, if you told me 20 years ago, or really even 10 years ago, that I would lose faith in Western medicine, I really would have laughed. And the way that, quite frankly, the way that I see the body is Western medicine has a lot to offer. Western medicine is here, and Western science, or our, the extent of what we know about the body, is here. And this gap in between is as large as an ocean. Okay. How did my thoughts transform so much? Well, when I stopped hormonal birth control, I experienced something that I didn't believe existed. I developed post-pill syndrome. And for anybody who this is a new term for, this is used a lot among women who have been on hormonal birth control of any sort, whether pill, so oral contraceptive, or an IUD with hormones in it. And then after discontinuing that contraceptive, they experience a whole host of symptoms. And typically these include fatigue, weight gain, migraine, or worsening headaches. It may not actually be migraine, but headaches of some sort. And if they've experienced headaches before, then the headaches are more frequent and more intense. Now, I experienced all those things. And in addition to those, I experienced something even worse. I experienced chronic UTI symptoms. And this was my life for a year and a half. So for 18 months, every single day, I was waking up to smelly pee, pee that just did not smell right, cloudy pee, urinary urgency, and burning while peeing. And I went to doctor after doctor. I initially, the standard urine cultures were showing up positive, and so was prescribed antibiotics. Eventually, they started showing up negative. I fell down the rabbit hole of PCR testing. This is polymerase chain reaction testing. This is an advanced way of detecting microinfections in the bladder and then having those treated with antibiotics. And ultimately, what happened was a practitioner, and this was solely to get me out of her hair, prescribed me a 28-day supply of Augmentin 875. So this is two antibiotics at 875 milligrams. So hella high dose with two very disruptive antibiotics. And I'd already been complaining about liver pain with the previous round of Augmentin 875. As I stood there with this script in my hand, I heard that voice in my head say, you realize you're practicing the definition of insanity, right? You're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Because that had been my life for the previous 18 months, expecting the antibiotics to do something, and they weren't. And one of the conversations I'd had with every single one of these practitioners was, do you think that this is somehow related to blood sugar problem? And the reason I asked this was because, once again, I'm a research scientist. I have worked around plenty of solvents in my day, including acetone. So I know what ketones smell like. Acetone is a ketone. I know what ketones smell like. So what I was perceiving with that weird smelling pee is these hints of acetone. And I was asking, and almost like fermented, so fermented fruit. So I was asking every single one of these practitioners, do you think I might be in ketosis? And every single one of them assured me, no, you're not, because your urine, you know, we've tested your urine. It doesn't point to it. Your A1C levels are okay. Your fasting glucose levels are okay. Like, all of the signs point to, no, you're not. Well, what ultimately happened was actually two slides from here. The way that I was avoiding pregnancy after I stopped hormonal birth control is by using this device on the left. This is the Mira at home fertility monitor. Basically, you pee on that wand that's shown in her right hand. You stick it into the Mira fertility monitor, and 16 to 21 minutes later, depending on which one you're using, you get a test result. And the test result will let you know what your estrogen levels are for the day, what your luteinizing hormone levels are for the day. Depending on which one you use, it also lets you know what your progesterone levels are for the day. And there are additional ones that also test FSH now. So I had been cycling normally. I'd been seeing those rise in estrogen when you would expect estrogen to rise right ahead of ovulation, seeing progesterone rise as it should during the luteal phase, during that second half of the cycle, seeing luteinizing hormone spike at the time of ovulation or right around within 72 hours of ovulation. So what I was not, all of a sudden, again, 18 months into these symptoms, what I did not see was a healthy cycle. And instead, I saw a cycle that was consistent with PCOS. Now, in case you aren't familiar with PCOS, PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. One of the root causes of PCOS is insulin resistance. So I held in my hand proof that I was dealing with a blood sugar problem. Now, we will go deep into insulin because insulin is one of the three hormones that make you tick: thyroid, insulin, cortisol. However, it is a conversation a few weeks down the line because of a variety of reasons. I set up the way that we'll talk here in a minute about what the overview of this program looks like and about what topics we're going to talk about, at least through weeks 1 through 4. As we move through this, I would love your feedback on how you think that this flows. If you think that a different way of organizing this would be better, I've set this up to talk about thyroid at the outset because I really could have picked anyone, mostly because T, thyroid, one of the hormones that make you tick. Tick starts with a T. We'll talk about thyroid first and then move from there actually over into cortisol because there's such a connection between thyroid hormone and cortisol regulation, adrenal fatigue, like all of the things that are so common and I think so, quite frankly, areas of concern for us as women that it felt right to start with those. We are using insulin as an example in one piece of today's conversation. Okay. So what I held in my hand was proof that I had dysregulated blood sugar metabolism, likely caused by insulin resistance. Because once again, one of the root causes of PCOS is insulin resistance. And so I took action. And what I did was change my diet, change how I exercised. I'd been doing yoga and Pilates over COVID. Previously, I'd been doing strength training, so weight resistance, so pumping iron. And as soon as I saw evidence of PCOS, I went right back to pumping iron because building skeletal muscle mass is the quickest way to restore insulin sensitivity, hands down. And then the other thing that I did was make sure that I was getting daily B multivitamins and enough of those. And we'll talk about this will come up again. This will not be the only time you hear this. We'll talk about why I'd not been taking my B vitamins in one of the later sessions. So, anyways, I started taking those again because essentially every single B vitamin except for one is associated with healthy insulin production, healthy use of insulin by the body. I started taking that, and within 1 week, and I kid you not, within 1 week, and this was after suffering with these symptoms for 18 months, unrelenting, except during brief periods where I got a little bit of relief from the antibiotics. All of a sudden, those symptoms cleared. I was peeing colorless, or not colorless because of the B vitamins. I was peeing clear. It did not smell funny. I did not have burning while I was peeing. That urinary urgency was subsiding. The other thing that was incredible was the fatigue was falling away. I had been suffering from exercise intolerance. Once again, if I did a long yoga session, or not Pilates so much, but I was really pushing the yoga, and it was not uncommon for me to do a 40-minute intense yoga session. You very fast-paced, think of core power yoga, just not in the studio. So it was not uncommon for me to do 40 minutes or even an hour of that, and then I would pay for it. I had severe exercise intolerance that started to subside very quickly. And I wholeheartedly believe to this day it was due to the switching back to doing strength training. Okay. So we have just talked about a lot. Now let's talk about kind of how this program is laid out. This will not be the only time that you see this hormone monitor. We will talk about this more throughout. Okay. All right. This is a jam-packed slide with a lot of information on it. It gives you what weeks 1 through 4 look like. We'll talk about what weeks 5 and 6 look like as we get closer to those. In week one, today, what we're doing is introducing the hormone lattice. It's a new way of looking at your body. It's a very different way from Western medicine. It is more how Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine view the body as integrated and whole. It's much more how naturopaths and even integrative practitioners are viewing the body. On Friday, we will talk about this is kind of our deep dive into thyroid, and specifically looking at the thyroid reproductive connection. And the reason for this is so many of us struggle with our cycles. We're either not bleeding, we are dealing with PCOS, which I wholeheartedly believe is a symptom, not an actual disease. We are dealing with low progesterone. So many of us have been in the boat where we have experienced miscarriage, recurrent miscarriage, and lots of times this is due to low progesterone. So, and oftentimes, like one of the leading causes of infertility that nobody talks about is low thyroid. So we're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about this in the space before we move on from here. We're going to talk about this in the space of how it's related to perimenopause and menopause, because oftentimes we think that hot flashes and insomnia and low libido and all the things that, all the bad things about menopause are related to either hormone upheaval or loss of estrogen and progesterone. And estrogen is getting such a bad rap today, but I don't want to go down that. I don't want to get on my soapbox about that. just yet. So it turns out that low thyroid can cause these exact same symptoms. And I've been there. And the reason for that is because of how impactful low thyroid is to cortisol. And if you're going, oh my gosh, Brandy, like this is so much information already, and we're only what, 10 minutes in, don't worry. We're going to kind of, this program's going to feel a lot like jumping into the deep end, swimming to the shallow end. It'll very rarely feel like you've ever getting out of the pool, but at least you've got the support of the bottom and are able to touch bottom during parts of this. And so what we've done today is kind of jump into the deep end. Here in a minute, we're going to go shallow. And you'll see that kind of same cycle throughout. So just rest assured, yes, it is a lot of information. It's not more than you can handle. You are able to process this. You are able to handle this. We are going to repeat and layer and revisit concepts. So there will be a layering and opportunity to really reinforce this foundation and this new perspective. Okay, in week two, we're going to go deeper into the thyroid. So Friday, we're kind of peeling back the curtain and showing that there's a problem. And then on Monday, we're talking more deeply about thyroid health. Then next Friday, so again, week two, we'll start talking about cortisol and the cortisol-thyroid connection. This is transformative. Week three, we'll talk about it. Estrogen dominance. This is a continuation of the cortisol talk. We'll talk about what thyroid, and then we'll introduce again insulin. Look at how thyroid and insulin are interconnected. Week four is more about insulin, more about the cortisol connection with insulin. And then in week five, which that very bottom bullet, that should actually be week five, we'll get into some real how-to around this. We'll look at the best way for you to exercise to support hormone balance. And quite frankly, this is regardless of your age. This is just as women. What is the best way to exercise in order to support hormone balance? And again, we'll take a deeper look at what's in week five and six later, because those weeks contain some of the bonus content that's not directly related to the hormones. I don't want to introduce the additional content contained in those weeks here, because I feel it is going to dilute the message and get you thinking about something else. And I very much want you focused on what we're talking about here. So without further ado, we're going to switch gears, get into what is the hormone lattice? Okay. Western medicine views the body as individual systems. So we have our endocrinologist, we have our cardiologist, we have our urologist, we have our ear, nose, and throat doctor, we have our bone doctor, right? Our orthopedic docs. We pretty much have a doctor for every part, every system within the body. What's actually true is your body is an interconnected network, and every single hormone and every single, the function of every single part of your body influences every other part. And the way that it does this is through hormones. Your hormones, in fact, well, that's one of the ways it does it. You also have the TLDR version of this is you also have fascia. This is a literal webbing that connects the structure of your body. So this is more, okay, another piece to this. You are not merely matter. You are matter and energy. And health is at that interface between energy and matter. Health resides between this perfect dance between energy and matter. You convert the food you eat into energy to fuel your body and meet all of your hormone needs. You convert, as children convert the food they eat into matter, but it's a transformation of matter. Okay, so with that, we're going to be talking more about the subtle body. So fascia is one aspect of it. Fascia is more gross or physical. We are talking about the hormones. This is more of the subtle body. This is more of the communication paths within the body. This is getting a little bit more into the energetic realm, the part of you that is not merely matter. And the best way to view that, much like the fascia, is also like a web. Okay, so this is a spider web. And this web gives the spider so much information. When an insect, so this would be the spider's food, makes its way into the web, flies into the web, the spider senses that because of the disruption of the web, right? It is able to sense and feel what went wrong or where in the web there's a disturbance and then respond to that disturbance. So if we think of our body very much as we think of this spider, we have a control center, just like the spider, right here in our brain. And it's a gland known as the hypothalamus. It is constantly receiving information from all parts of your body, deciding what to do with that, deciding how to react to that, and then responding by making hormones that signal another part of your body to do something. Okay, we are going to revisit this. So just, this is kind of the broad overview. Okay, now imagine what happens when a bird flies through this spider web. And it could be a very small bird, like a hummingbird. But imagine what happens when a bird flies through it, a hummingbird flies through it. Well, several different things could happen, right? If we have a hummingbird fly through this region, the spider senses a disturbance in this region and goes in and rebuilds these strands that are broken. What happens if a hummingbird flies through here? One of these anchor strands, these strands that tether the web to the environment. Well, the web folds in on itself. And the spider has more work to do to restabilize the web. In the same way, this is how your body works. Okay. So this is just taking a look at the hormone lattice. I've not included those anchor strands that tether your body to the environment. What we are looking at here is just your body floating in space. And you may think, well, it kind of looks more like a target than it does necessarily a web or a lattice right now. I very much like to think of it as a web. So let's just walk through this. All right, each one of these strands represents a different hormone. So we have progesterone is this outermost ring, testosterone is the next ring, estrogen, DHEA. So all of your sex hormones are the rings in this particular one. And then the spokes, kind of like the spokes of a wheel, we've got melatonin, cortisol, thyroid. I grouped thyroid T3 and T4 here. Your thyroid gland also makes three other hormones that we rarely talk about. Adrenaline, insulin. These two, SHBG and TBG, are not actually hormones. They bind hormones. They are binding globulins or binding proteins. Just know your body makes 40, I believe it's 42 different hormones. And part of the reason for not putting them here is especially for TBG, it got really crowded. Aldosterone. Now, because TBG and SHBG both influence hormones, I went ahead and left them here. But like I say, just know these are not hormones. These are more hormone influencers. The point of this is whenever something changes in any of these, it impacts every other part. So a change in your insulin is going to impact all of your sex hormones. It's going to impact your thyroid hormone, your cortisol, your melatonin, and all the others. Okay, this is worth noting. I know this program's not specific to perimenopausal and menopausal women. However, this is so worth noting because regardless of your age right now, one day you will be here. What happens for women after 40 is the amount or the kind of the thickness of the strands of the sex hormones gets thinner because these are starting to diminish, not disappear, but diminish within the body. And so, whereas in this web on the left, these sex hormones are really able to buffer and provide much more buffer to your system than they are after the age of 40. After the age of 40, you simply do not have as much buffer because especially you're losing progesterone, you're losing estrogen, DHEA and testosterone are also dramatically affected, especially testosterone. DHEA is produced by the adrenals, not necessarily the ovaries. However, DHEA also starts to diminish because of the relationship and because of the conversion between testosterone and DHEA, and because of the demands of DHEA to kind of be diverted down alternate pathways to support other hormone levels. So all of your sex hormones start to diminish after 40, and those strands just become a lot thinner, a lot more fragile, a lot less able to provide any sort of buffer to your system. And so this is why, unless we're living like super optimally, and here I mean incredibly optimally, very little stress, great nutrition, all of the things. This is why so many of us struggle in that perimenopause, menopause shift. Okay, we just talked about what's the difference between the two. So I'm going to go on. Okay. We also talked in detail about this. Now, the reason why I included this particular example of a spider web is this gives you a much, I feel like this kind of highlights the anchor strands. Again, these are the strands that tether the web, in this case, tether your body to the environment. So what are the anchor strands for us? Well, they are diet, lifestyle, and exercise. And yes, I like to pull lifestyle and exercise apart. You could say, well, exercise is really part of your lifestyle. Well, yeah, that's true, but there's so much to exercise. There's how you exercise, what form of exercise you choose. There's how often you do it. There's how long you do it. Like there's all the things. There's so much to exercise. It really deserves its own anchor strand. Lifestyle, this is everything. This is your work-life balance. This is how, satisfied you are in your relationships, how healthy your relationships are, how stressed certain relationships are, how stressed you are in general, financial and really all of the things. Then of course, diet plays a huge role in supporting your body and in supporting optimal hormonal balance. Okay, this is how I work with clients one-on-one, is we focus in on three hormones, the hormones again that make you tick. And I mentioned this earlier in today's session, thyroid, insulin, and cortisol, the three hormones that make you tick. Now, we're going to visit we're going to set up a few concepts using insulin as an example. One of the things that I didn't mention earlier in the session, but this is something that's going to come up again and again as we move through this, is how Ayurveda sees the body. We, from a Western perspective, we oftentimes use blood tests to give us lots of information about how well our organs and our glands are making hormones. And honestly, this gives us part of the picture. This is one of the reasons that women, you know, this is kind of hard to believe. Because like, if you're like me, I've considered my period a devil or a major inconvenience for all of my life, for the entire time I've had it, from onset of menarche all the way up until just a few years ago. And the reason why my view of it has changed is because as women, our menstrual cycle gives us so much information about our health that if you were a man, you would not have. And it really helps to cue you in or clue you in to what is going on with your health in real time, or pretty dang close to real time, and especially if you're using at-home hormone monitoring. In Ayurveda, so circling back around to my point here, in Ayurveda, Ayurveda very much sees the body as layered. So when you eat food and it starts to be digested and starts to supply the body with nourishment, it fuels the plasma or feeds the plasma layer. So this is serum layer of your body first. And then what's left over nourishes the red blood cells. And then what's left over from that nourishes the next layer down. And it goes on and on like this. There's seven layers of the body in Ayurveda. It goes on and on like this. And the last layer to receive nutrients or nourishment is the reproductive layer. And so when our health starts to go out of balance, what goes out first? The reproductive layer. And so oftentimes when we're chasing when we're chasing imbalance in estrogen and progesterone, that's not at the root of the problem. Those are symptoms of the real issue. And so we need to take a step back, and we need to keep taking steps back until we get to the root of the problem. And I feel like root cause is so overused this today. Like, it is so overused. And so, you know, I hesitate to use it. I cannot think of a better way to describe it. And ultimately, the way I see the root of any problem is these conversion hormones. It's these energy conversion hormones, thyroid, insulin, and cortisol. Now, keep in mind this Ayurveda view of, once again, feeding the plasma first, feeding the serum first, and then whatever spills over, feeding or fueling the rest of the body. We're going to use insulin as an example here. I'm going to skip past this slide. So what is insulin resistance? Okay, this picture on the left shows a normal insulin-sensitive state. Now, what is the role? Actually, let's go back to, let's not. Okay, what is the role of insulin in the body? Insulin helps glucose get out of your bloodstream. Now, what the hell is glucose? Okay, when you eat, I think we all know this, but I'm going to go over it anyways. When you eat any food, they consist of macros. Macros is the short for it. They may be called macronutrients. They fall into three categories: carbs, protein, and fat. Now, of these three, carbs, protein, and fat, your body, like every cell in your body, is able to use carbs as an energy source. Not every cell type in your body is able to use protein. Not every cell type in your body is able to use fat as an energy source. So carbs are the universal energy source for every single cell type in your body. Why is this important? Okay, carbs consist of complex. You can think of them as polymers. Like the type of polymer we're most familiar with is plastic, right? So it is repeating unit of the same thing over and over and over again. Carb is a repeating unit of the same thing over and over and over again. This, when a carb is fully broken down, its simplest form is glucose. Its simplest fuel form is glucose. Okay, glucose is packaged up. So as your body begins digesting carbs, protein, and fat, each of these gets packaged up within the digestive tract and then passed out of your digestive tract, makes around in your liver, gets further kind of redistributed, suitcased up or packaged up, and then starts circulating around in your bloodstream. The role of insulin is to get that glucose out of your bloodstream and into your body's cells, where it's able to be converted from glucose, so from matter, into energy to support energy processes. This is done by the mitochondria of the cell, not always mitochondria. Anyways, okay, maybe how it's done is not important because red blood cells do not have mitochondria. Okay, but long story short, the glucose has to make its way into the cell in order to be converted from matter into energy. Otherwise, what happens is you wind up with high blood sugar and insufficient energy because your tissues are deficient, devoid, often maybe not devoid, but deficient of energy because they don't have enough glucose to meet energy demands. And there's too much glucose hanging out in your bloodstream. So that looks like this situation on the right here, where you've got lots of glucose in the bloodstream. This is where you would have high fasting glucose levels. This is where you might have high glucose levels throughout the day. So high blood sugar levels throughout the day. This is one of the reasons why this leads to not feeling hungry kind of ever. And this also causes your pancreas to secrete more insulin because there's too little, well, there's too much glucose in the bloodstream, too little glucose in the tissues. And this is sending a signal back up to the hypothalamus. So again, the hypothalamus is kind of like that spider saying, hey, you know, the tissues need more energy and there's too much sugar in the blood. There's too much glucose in the blood. So then that the hypothalamus responds, sends a signal, AKA a hormone, down to the pancreas saying, hey, release more insulin. So the pancreas releases more insulin, and then insulin tries to get the body's cells to respond. And here's how it does that. You have insulin receptors on the cell membrane of the cells within your body. And normally, when insulin binds in those receptors, it opens up a little portal. It opens up a glucose channel to allow glucose into the cell. And then once the glucose is in the cell is able to convert it from glucose into energy. In an insulin resistant state, that insulin may be binding, but there's something wrong with this connection that is preventing this glucose channel from opening. And so it stays closed. And so then glucose continues to build up in the bloodstream. Now, one of the people often use this rusty door lock analogy. So in this case, insulin would be the key and the rusty door lock would be that insulin receptor. The way that I like to think of it in modern day, and once again, because I've worked half my life in buildings that require badge access. And I realize this is a phone, but pretend this is a badge. So you hold your badge up to the badge reader and the damn door won't unlock. This happens to me all the time. So then you're standing there and you're like, okay, is the problem with the badge? Not very likely. In this case, the badge would be the insulin. Is the problem with the badge reader? Probably. Or is the problem with the circuitry between the badge reader and the door lock? So this is really like how I like to think of insulin resistance. It's like a faulty badge reader. The badge reader itself representing the insulin receptor, the locked door representing the glucose channel, and you are the glucose. So much like that badge reader at work, if you're unable to get the door unlocked, you can't get in to do the work. It's the same with the glucose. If the glucose can't get into the cell is deprived of energy. And what does this cause? Well, it causes a whole host of symptoms. You are probably able to guess one of the biggest ones, fatigue. The other things it causes is pretty much any symptom under the sun, especially headaches. So many symptoms are associated with a low energy state. Insulin resistance is one of those. And once again, we are going to revisit insulin resistance in depth. What I want to do, though, is this same, let's see if I can go back a slide. This same slide that we looked at, this, what is insulin resistance? The same thing happens with thyroid hormones. Okay. Now with thyroid hormones, a little more complex. We got two different colors of triangles instead of just one. One color triangle is representing T3, one color triangle is representing T4. And these may be circulating. So the green, instead of representing glucose in this case, the little balls are actually representing the binding proteins. So this specifically is TBG. TBG stands for thyroxine binding globulin. Anytime you see the word globulin, it means protein. Thyroxine is the full name for T4 hormone. But here's the thing. Thyroxine binding globulin doesn't just bind T4, it also binds T3. So an easier way to think of this is thyroid binding globulin. It's often abbreviated TBG for short. Let's see. I was going to say something else about it. Oh, TBG is not the only protein in your bloodstream that will bind to thyroid hormones. Albumin and there's another main, they're kind of three main proteins. So TBG definitely binds the most, but albumin and there's one other protein also bind to heavily to thyroid hormones. And what this does is it reduces the number of free circulating thyroid hormones in your bloodstream. Now, every single cell type in your body needs thyroid hormone, but there's also, just like we saw for insulin, how in an insulin resistant state, the glucose isn't getting out of your bloodstream and into your body's cells. It's possible to be almost like in a thyroid hormone resistant state where the thyroid hormone isn't able to get out of your bloodstream and into your body's cells where it's effective. And one of the main reasons for this is because there's a cortisol imbalance. Now, cortisol is not the only imbalance. And this is, again, is something we're going to look at. But this is also why so often, like if you are ever able to get a doctor to test for anything besides TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone, thyroid stimulating hormone is made by the pituitary. So what happens in this kind of hormone cascade is the hypothalamus produces a hormone to tell the pituitary to produce TSH. The pituitary produces TSH and that travels down to the thyroid here in your neck to tell it to produce the thyroid hormones. And once again, there are five of those. We really only ever talk about two of those. We talk about T3 and T4. Okay. So TSH, once again, made by your pituitary, gives you no information on how well your thyroid's actually making thyroid hormone. And similarly, T3 and T4, whether we're looking at total T3, which total T3 would be what is bound by thyroid binding globulin plus what is free circulating. That's total. So both of these are total T3, just like bound T4, or total T4 is bound T4 plus free T4. So just like that, even when you're being tested for free T3 and free T4, or free T3, free T4, total T3, total T4, it's not the full picture of whether or not your cells are receiving the thyroid hormone. And on that note, we are going to stop today. It'll be food for thought. This is one of the things that we are going to talk more about as we move through this. Okay. This is just a more of a little picture of that low thyroid state intracellularly, so within the cell. So in this particular one, we've got, and you know, this looks similar to that insulin, to that cell with the insulin. These are your thyroid hormone transporters in the cell membrane. And then this allows T3, free T3 and free T4, because you'll notice these are unbound to any protein, into the cell. And then some of these are also crossing over into the nucleus of the cell and binding thyroid hormone receptors within the nucleus of the cell. When you are in a low thyroid state, it is possible to test for this. And this is where integrative practitioners come into play. Again, we'll talk more about that next time. Okay.